This is The Producers with Ryan Drain, a podcast designed for radio imaging, commercial production, all things audio. Feedback is encouraged at ryanontheradio.com.
All right, thanks again for tuning in. As always, I do appreciate all the emails and all the great critique that I get. Most of it's nice comments. I always appreciate that. And remember, if you want to hit me up about anything, questions for guests, if you want to get on the list, just email me. Just hit my website, ryanontheradio.com. There's the email address there. But I'll send you an email telling you about future guests and whatnot, and you can get involved. But anyway, any other announcements or whatever I got to talk about, I'm going to do at the end of part number two, because I say we just dive right in. Instead of me yapping in the beginning, I'll stop yapping and yap at the end. You got it. Okay. Jeff Thomas is the guest. We're going to kick it off with his Kilohertz demo, which is an amazing piece of production, but probably my least favorite of all the excellent production I'm going to play throughout the episode today. And this one is on the long side again, because I've got like 12, I think maybe even 13 minutes of audio that I'm going to play throughout. So a lot of it, it's very good stuff. So again, if you are unaware of who Jeff Thomas is, well, stay tuned, because he's had just about every big gig in the history of radio imaging. And now we dive in with starting with his Kilohertz demo.
From a studio far, far away. From a mind.
You have a mind. A wonderful mind.
Long, long, long gone.
May I have your attention, please?
Come on! The radio imaging services of Jeff Thomas Productions.
Mic check, 1, 2.
And the next generation of killer sound design.
Killer sound design.
Combine. Online.
Kilohertz 5 at kilohertz.com. Program terminated.
And there he is. That is the Kilohertz demo. Jeff Thomas is the guest. Jeff from, is it sunny Australia today?
It's grey Australia. Grey Sydney.
Grey Australia. Tell me, how is the future, by the way?
How is tomorrow?
Yes, how is tomorrow? Is it going to be okay?
I thought yesterday was a little better. I'd stay where you are.
Stay where we are. I love it. It's I think we're dealing with a 15-hour time difference on this podcast, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah, quite a delay.
You're actually in Sydney, right? Or at least right near Sydney?
Sydney, I'm about 30 Ks north of Sydney. But okay. Yeah, on the east coast of Australia, yeah.
Okay. And tell me about, you're basically a pretty international guy when it comes to production. Living there, does it hinder you in any way? Or are you pretty much, I mean, with today's, you know, global world of technology, are you pretty much just wide open to do whatever?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the internet, before that, ISDN meant that, you know, it opened this world to me. Now FTP sites and everything means that you can move audio around in a lot of ways, because most of my clients are still overseas. You know, I can get the information from, say, somebody in LA in their evening, and can be pretty much working on it while they're asleep, so and have something for them in the morning when they wake up. So from that point of view, it's quite beneficial. I've been pretty lucky too that in the last few years I've been able to make some decisions that have, you know, led me to a much more of a lifestyle kind of mix in my life. I live and work about a K away from the beach. I spend most mornings, you know, at the beach rather than in traffic. And you know, by the afternoon I can go and spend time with the kids and that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's good now that I can kind of take the foot off a bit.
Yeah. I think, well, just to let people know where we're going to go. You know, I mentioned, or at least I played the Kilohertz demo there, and Kilohertz is an amazing service. We're going to talk about that a little later, but you have had some pretty epic gigs as far as radio branding and imaging production goes. So we're going to kind of do this interview in sort of a timeline, and I have some submitted questions from folks actually around the world, and we'll drop those in, and then there's some other topics that I want to drop in as well. But I think it'll be fun for us to kind of carry through from the beginning until today. So let's start there. Start at the beginning. Where did you first get into this, you know, this production business we do?
Well, I was lucky. My father was in radio, so I was exposed to it very early. I was living in Perth, which is on the west coast of Australia. In the year I turned 15, the school I was at had a program called Work Experience. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. That's where you can kind of, you know, nominate your preference as far as a career choice goes, and the school will organize a week for you to go and sit with that business or with that trade and kind of, you know, just have a look. So I knew that I wanted to go and sit at a radio station. I ended up getting a week at a radio station called 6 p.m., which is AM top 40 station was then. This is actually before FM hadn't started in Australia. It didn't start in Australia until 1980. I started at 6 p.m. As the carting boy, you know, putting basically the spots and the promos onto cartridge. And then after about 6 months of doing that, the guy that was above me, who was making the promos and the spots, told the sales manager to go F himself, and was out of the building that afternoon. And even though this was the number one station in town, for 6 months they didn't replace him. So it was kind of baptism by fire. I was making promos, making spots, and carting them. For at least a 6 month period there. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it was sink or swim.
So we're at the beginning here. You've started out at the age of 15. Did you actually go on to college or university and kind of go through that? Or did you jump right into this as your career at a very young age like that and stay with it?
No, well, when they called me, when the station called me to start, I had to drop out. So, you know, not something I'd recommend to anybody, but it kind of, in hindsight, it paid off. So I had to go and have the long chat with the parents and say, look, this is what I really want to do. Luckily, Dad realized that, you know, radio was kind of one of those things where getting your foot in the front door was a major part. So they wrote the letter and I got out and started.
And so from there, what would you say was your first kind of major gig where you knew that not only were you going to do this as a job, but you were probably going to be really successful at it?
You know, after a couple of years at 6 p.m., I'd had a couple of job offers. That I turned down. And I guess then, you know, I did sort of go back and start doing some, you know, like continued my education at night and stuff. I didn't have a car or anything, so I had to do a correspondence. So, you know, I kind of worked out from that point that it was probably going to be okay. As far as getting a job that I felt was really there, that didn't happen for another nearly 8-10 years.
Talk real quick. This was sent in, and I'm interested in this as well, but influences as far as your radio career, I'm guessing your father was probably one of them, but as far as like radio imaging as well, what kind of influences did you have back then?
I think, you know, a lot of it was what Triple M was already doing. You know, I think FM radio in Australia kind of came out, it was almost AOR. It was kind of very, you know, the jocks were very slow and smoky and, you know, that kind of thing. Triple M rocked, and Triple M kind of had production that was more like what we'd been used to on AM. So from that point of view, you know, that was probably the first one. But then we were also getting tapes from the States back then, and, you know, we were listening to Dave Fox promos back then, and you know, there was a few American stars of the time that you know, the Bumper Morgans and people like that were, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say they were huge influences.
So that I was wondering about that. Was there a lot of I don't know, folks in Australia that were paying a lot of attention to what was going on American radio?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't have the internet, obviously, so it wasn't as easy to hear it.
Sure.
But you know, people would go over and come back with tapes, and you know, we'd go through them.
Yeah.
And you know, there was an afternoon jock on the station that went over to the States quite a lot, and he'd come back and you know, have an edit ready for me. He'd scope the air checks that were all done on cassettes and kind of give me a, you know, just a copy of the production, which you know, and then I'd start to build that up. I mean, I think it's a great thing. It's something we try and do on Kilohertz too now, is to kind of have a bank of production that inspires you. And, you know, if you get in of a morning and grab your coffee and sort of sit down and listen to some great work, can, you know, almost get the hairs on the back of the neck standing up. You know, that was happening back then, and you know, still happens today. You know, I still listen to stuff that is inspiring, and you know, whether it's the way it's written or the way it's mixed or the overall kind of sound quality, you know, all those things kind of spur you on.
I got a handful of demos to play from you throughout this. I just wanted to say that when I heard your Kiss stuff again, because I grew up in L.A., you know, so I grew up with that sound, and it definitely did that for me, the hairs on the neck. Really good stuff. We'll play that a little later. But
thanks. Yeah, Kiss was, you know, it was a really great time. I mean, in the beginning of the 90s, I think they'd lost their way a little bit, but... you know, we were experimenting a lot with, you know, how we could blend the production with the music and how everything could just kind of come out as one. But also, you know, the station, which I'm sure you want to go into a bit later, but, you know, the station was built on hype, and that kind of, for me, was right time, right place.
The new number is 158.
Please check your radio frequency.
Virgin. Though 4.5 billion years old, think of the Earth as a person who has just turned 46 years of age. The first signs of life don't flower until age 42. Just 12 months ago, dinosaurs burst in and out of existence. 8 months ago, mammals evolved. 4 hours ago, man crept out of the cave. And 90 seconds ago, the Industrial Revolution began. In this last minute, man struggled to harness the forces of nature. 20 seconds ago, reached out for global communication. And 10 seconds ago, the electric guitar was born.
Just play it loud, okay?
Ready to fall on London FM radio. Be ready. Be listening. FM 105.8. Virgin.
Take us to Virgin. Would that be, I guess you really, for the first time, got big international?
Yeah, it was about, I think it was about the mid-90s. I got the opportunity to go over there. Richard Branson had started the radio station. They'd been going for a couple of years nationally as an AM-er. And then he got the FM license for London. So they were simulcasting. It hadn't started then, but the idea was that they were going to simulcast the feeds with just some, you know, a few shows that were going to be unique to London. So, you know, it was a shock to start off with. You know, I'd come from Triple M, which, you know, for most Americans, I'd imagine the Triple M studios, you'd probably compare it more to a recording studio. You know, I was using a 2-inch 24-track multi-track, a big 36 input MCI board. We had floor to ceiling glass. You know, the whole kind of production console was up on a platform. You know, big monitors that were built into the wall, like a real recording studio kind of look. Not to mention that if you turned around, you could see, you know, Bondi in the Pacific Ocean. And then I went over to London and walked into the studio, which was a box with no tape machine. They didn't have a tape machine in the entire building. And I hadn't, to be honest, I hadn't turned on a computer at that stage. You know, they were still something that the sales department dealt with, or accounts. And in production, you know, we didn't have anything to do with them. So, you know, and I walked into the studio and they said, okay, this is Pro Tools. This is the computer, you know, go for it. And it was, you know, it was extremely basic compared to what it is now. I think the external audio drive was 500 megabytes. You know, I'd be pushed getting a promo onto it now.
You're right, exactly. Yeah, I think my sessions are in the... just a hair under a gig.
Yeah.
Wow. So how long were you at Virgin, and what did you think about what you were doing there?
Well, initially, it was great because of the variety, and in the end, it was horrible because of the variety. You know, there was just too much going on. Mm. The the first brief was to start to work on creating, you know, an audio brand. Virgin had a very visual brand, but hadn't had any audio brand. So it was to work on that. Then, you know, the second week they said, well, you know, we've just received the audio on-air audio processor. Can you go and set that up? Because, you know, they didn't have any techs full-time in the building. Then they said a few days after that, they said, okay, we need to make these test transmissions, which were 4 one-hour kind of puff piece production epics that would run a week each leading up to the launch of the radio station. So we had to work on those. And, you know, by this stage, we're working around the clock and the deadline was looming as far as getting the station on the air. And then one of the ideas they had was for this program that was going to be unique to London, which had a band would come in every day and do a live set to air. It used to go to air at about 7 o'clock. And I got given that job too. So, you know, after 3 years at the radio station, I'd ended up mixing about somewhere in the vicinity of about 400-500 sessions, live-to-air sessions. And
wow.
That was awesome from an experience point of view. I mean, we're talking, you know, it's London, so it was like it went from Robert Plant and Jimmy Page to Bon Jovi to Sting to Ian Dury, you know. So it was some it was a real experience. But like I said, in the end, there was just too much going on for you to really concentrate on any one particular thing.
Let me kind of get in here with a question about voice talent. Now, when we were talking on the phone, you had sort of mentioned to me you really don't voice anything. You don't spend your time on that. You didn't even have a microphone hooked up, right? So
no, I had to borrow this mic. I had to. I've got it running through an M-Box because I just realized I didn't have a preamp here. But I never record locally. You know, even from when I was doing Kiss and Virgin and all of those jobs, it's always been ISDN.
Yeah.
So and that's something that I guess, you know, trying to compete internationally, I didn't really think an Australian accent was going to make the right impact, you know, or it was going to limit me to the sort of stuff that I could do. In hindsight, when I think back at how long it takes me to repackage a radio station and how long it takes the voice to do their part, I regret the decision sometimes and, you know, sit back and think, you know, my life would be much easier if I was sitting there talking rather than locking myself in a studio until it hurt.
Yeah, I think most people listening are going to realize you don't have a bad voice. I mean, this is something you could do. And I was going to say, I mean, us production guys know that, you know, we don't get paid quite as much and it takes us a lot longer. You're absolutely right.
Well, I think the pay thing's turned around. And, you know, I know that at Sydney, I was paid about the same as the voice guy and he was in half an hour a day. So I think one of the things that I said to myself when I went to London was that I was going to make the production be the branding rather than that one voice. Mm-hmm. It was going to be how the pieces are put together and using, you know, lots of different elements to make it. That style is what makes it Virgin Production rather than it's that big voice or that female voice or whatever.
Yeah, that's actually exactly where I wanted to go. That makes a lot of sense. And I hear that in your production. You're not hearing, at least often from what I've heard of yours, you're not hearing a completely prevalent voice, but like you said, it's more about the production itself. So tell me about how you use voiceover in your production and talk about also selecting voices in your production.
Well, I guess, you know, I've kind of gone more down the event style. I mean, I still make things that are that are driven by the read, and then I'll like find someone that I think you know has the right tone to, and you know a trailer sounding style. But for the others, you know, for the other parts, you know, it's a combination of things. With Howard, the brief was very much, you know, minimum narrative, minimum voiceover. And also, it can't sound like normal FM style production. So, you know, we started to play around more with, you know, old American speeches and news stories and kind of made it almost like a clip art. Kind of clip art meets the devil kind of approach. At Virgin, it was kind of using listeners. Even at Kiss, I mean, you know, we were using listeners that hadn't been done in LA for a while. So we sort of saw that as an opportunity to have a bit of fun. And also back then, you know, obviously if we had a listener get on the air and say, you know, I listen because, you know, I love the music or it's got great variety, was a lot easier than having the voiceover come out and say, you know, we've got great variety. You know, it just kind of didn't work.
Yeah, it gives you a little more credibility too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about Kiss. One of my favorite stations ever is Kiss FM in LA. First of all, tell me, when were you there?
I started there in about 97, and I was imaging through to about, it was about just under 8 years, so what's that? It was around 2004. But in 2000, I moved back to Sydney, so I did 3 years on site, and or about 5 years back from Sydney.
And when they, did they, let's see here, how'd you get that job? Let me just say it like that. How'd you get that gig to kind of redefine Kiss FM in LA?
I had put out the first Kilohertz CD in about 96, 97. And that started to get used on a few US stations. And one of them, I think Kiss hadn't had anybody imaging for a while before I started. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but I think there was quite a long period where no one was on-site imaging. And Eric Chase was doing it from FLZ.
Sure.
And Eric had many stations that he was doing at the time and was, like, you know, completely overworked. But he purchased a copy of Kilohertz 1 for the Kiss job. And just through talking to him, and he said, we're looking for somebody. I was right at the point where I was looking for, you know, the next thing. You know, a few weeks later, I got a call from BJ Harris and started talking about the opportunity of going to LA. I had quit from Virgin and without... you know, anything else locked down. And
yeah,
actually on my way from London to Sydney, stopped by LA for a few days to meet with the new PD and the general manager and have a look around. And so that's how it happened.
We're going to hear your Kiss FM demo. It's one of my favorites. I mean, just my favorite piece of production, period. So let's check this out.
In the beginning, God created man.
It's 5:59.
Kiss FM.
Yeah, baby.
I'm so emotional, baby.
Lonely.
You just won.
Non-stop.
Kiss FM.
Move to it.
It's every star in one night.
There's so many people. There's so much energy.
It's a big deal.
Every fan in one voice.
What happened when you first walked out?
They started screaming. I was like, oh, thank you.
Every tour in one.
These are some of the fans.
The only one.
They're expecting about 120,000 people.
Wango Tango. On Monday, March 3rd.
Hello? You cannot talk.
The Mag.
It's your birthday, February
20th. The Madness.
Oh my God.
And the Money.
Unbelievable.
Are back.
Carolyn?
Yes.
You
you just won $1 million.
D's Million Dollar Birthday Game. March Million Dollar Madness.
102.7.
Kiss. Kiss FM.
So there you go. Kiss FM, Los Angeles, Jeff Thomas demo. A lot of drama. I mean, it's got a mixture of great sounds, but I know that were you starting to use more drama at this point in your production?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it helped that it was Los Angeles and Hollywood. You know, the station was kind of right there behind Universal and NBC, and so that was a big thing. And it was clear and made clear to me that, you know, the station was going to be built on hype, as I say. So it just worked. I mean, I'm not a comedy guy, like, as in I don't sort of see comedy in production as one of my strengths. So, but I do like to, you know, if there was the hype already there with the sort of things Kiss wanted to do, like Wango Tango and giving away $1 million and these kind of things, you know, I wanted to add the height. You know, I wanted to kind of bring these things that not only had that kind of I guess trailer drama, but also make some of these spots sound like they were, you know, just coming out of this beast that was 1,000 meters high and 1,000 meters wide, and you know, not just by burying things in reverb, but by giving things, you know, it's a lot like kind of listening to trailers or listening to music. You know, they'll bring you down to lift you up. You can't kind of have everything at 11 all the time and still expect the result. And a lot of it to me still gets me going. If you've got a piece and all of a sudden you hear that kind of a little bit of an unexpected change in the chord of the bed, and then the voiceover kind of you know, changes and puts that little bit of a different slant on the next line. To me, those are the things that still, even though you're using words, you know, they can still be pressing other buttons.
That's interesting to hear. Talk about writing in your production. Obviously, I mean, I think it'd be dumb to say writing's not important. It's important. But at what level is the importance of writing? How much time do you spend on it? Just talk about writing in imaging.
You know, it's something that it came really. It was tricky. It didn't come easy to me, and it was something that no one could really sit down and kind of explain. You know, we'll hear all the tips and all the secrets. So I think you know, I would spend a certain amount of time before any spot. You know, obviously, if you've got a good script, things, you know, just fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the piece in the Virgin tape of, you know, though 4.5 billion years old, think of the Earth as a person, you know, that kind of, you don't have to do much after you've got that script because the script is so strong. Now I would probably, you know, for the sake of an argument, probably say that words don't have the same kind of effect on radio as they used to. And, you know, you really need to kind of go that extra mile to make them compelling. You know, it's kind of like that junk mail thing of, you know, those things that used to be in your letterbox a few years back saying, you know, you've already won $1 million, and everyone just ripped them up. And I think radio kind of also made that harder by this idea that jocks and production would come out and say the same thing at the beginning of their rave all the time, whether it was a positioning statement or whatever. And I think, you know, people wised up and their filters got tighter and tighter. I mean, if you think about how long you give a piece on the air now, if you're not listening to it from a kind of critical, you know, production, if you're not working, you probably give something, you know, maybe 3 to 5 seconds before you've tuned out. If you're not interested, if it hasn't pressed your buttons, and you know, that means it has to be compelling from the first second. You know, it has to kind of stop people in their tracks, and that's harder to do with words now because there's just simply so much of it. And you know, if they didn't have these filters in their brain, you know, they'd be going into complete overload.
There you go. Well, that's the end of part number one. Part number two, if you haven't already downloaded it and you want to check it out, we're going to get into the Capital FM days coming up at the very beginning of that. And plenty of more Jeff Thomas audio. We still have the Howard Stern days as well. And then we really get into a lot more technical stuff where instead of just talking about kind of his journey and mixing it in, we're going to just really dive into filtering, compression, processing in general, what he uses, how he does it. And a few more listener questions coming in as well. Like I said, tons of audio. I don't know about you so far, but I've always been impressed with Jeff Thomas. And then just listening to his demos again was... It definitely inspires. I don't know. Hopefully it inspires you. It inspires me. I'm also just going to let you know real quick right now. I'll have plenty of more, kind of announcement stuff at the end of part two. But also hit the website, the podcast show notes section. There will be a lot of content up there. He sent me screenshots, and I'll post his demos there as well so you can re-listen to his stuff. Because they are a little long, and you might want to just have them by themselves in a little standalone type deal. All right, check out part two. But thank you for checking part one out too. Okay, bye for now.